Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
The recent encyclical by Pope Francis V on the environment, or better yet, on creation. Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is the Seminary Explores. With us today is Professor William J. Collins, now Emeritus of Theology and Philosophy at Mount St. Mary's University in Emmitsburg and an active member of the community in Gettysburg and in Emmitsburg. I want to ask Bill, first of all, how would you situate this encyclical? What is an encyclical, and how? I know you've said already in your lecture on this subject that it is different from other encyclicals.
Yes. First off, an encyclical is a major teaching document issued by a pope. It's normally not the vehicle of an infallible teaching or anything like that, but it has a high degree of authority. Popes have only been issuing these things since 1740, and by my count, this is the 296th of them. So they've been busy. This is the first written only by Pope Francis. Saint Francis didn't write it.
No, not yet.
Right. Okay. It is one of the social encyclicals. That's a tradition that started in 1891 with Pope Leo XIII, Rerum Novarum, which was about the condition of workers in industrial society. About a dozen major documents on social questions. In the more recent ones, there have been some treatments of environmental issues. This is the first to really focus on that. And It's been part of that tradition ever since they started talking about the environment, which would be with Paul VI in 1971. They always connect environmental issues to social issues. We can talk about that some more. This one goes further. The whole focus is on environmental issues, but the Pope says explicitly this belongs to the social encyclical tradition, the social teaching tradition. Do you want me to talk about the theology of creation?
Yeah, I will in a minute. Okay. I wanted to go back first and say the title is Laudato Si. Is that Italian, Japanese, English?
It is medieval
Spanish.
Italian.
It should be Spanish with Francis, who is an Argentinian.
Yeah, it's medieval Italian, actually. Most titles are in Latin, like Rerum Novarum, which I already mentioned. This is from the opening words of St. Francis. It is Saint this time. St. Francis of Assisi, his poem, The Canticle of the Sun. And it means, may you be praised. Or be praised, right. O Lord, for all the different things of creation, the sun, the moon. Possibly you are familiar with it in some form. O Lord, be praised for brother sun and so forth.
Brother moon, brother donkey. And I'm glad you said that, because when I first saw this title in a memo about your lecture on this subject, I thought, oh, they misspelled the Latin. You know, it doesn't. There's no. But and the reason is it's medieval. Medieval Italian, and it's appropriate that he name it after Saint Francis, because this Francis is, in a sense, took his name from Saint Francis, and there's a real connection here between the kind of feeling for creation, the identity with creation by St. Francis and the current Pope Francis.
Yes, in fact, this is the first Pope Francis, and he consciously chose his name in imitation of St. Francis of Assisi. And there's two things that you can see right away in this document, as well as in the whole ministry of Pope Francis, the love of nature and the love of the poor. The poor certainly have been the principal theme, I think, of Francis's pontificate in his first few years, but the love of nature also. So there's a very much the figure of St. Francis of Assisi. It not only gives this encyclical its title, but it gives it its spirit.
And before we even get to the theology of creation, you have said, and I think this is a profound insight, that it's really not an encyclical in the usual sense, but a meditation.
It is an encyclical, but there is an invitation to all of us, in the last couple of chapters especially, to look at our own lives in light of what he's saying about our relationship to the rest of God's creation, to examine the way that we think, the way that we live. So, I mean, every encyclical gives us something to think about, but this one more consciously and explicitly invites us to reflect on the presence of God in nature, reflect on the goodness of creation, reflect on the ways we're living with it.
More reflection than instruction.
Yeah, toward the end.
Uh-huh, yeah. And that leads us then to another, you thought, rather remarkable, if not unique, feature, and that is that in its theology of creation.
Yes. I think this is the major new thing here. Now, the church has been teaching the theology of creation forever, pretty much. What's new is to explicitly connect it to social issues in a document like this. So everything that he says about creation, or just about everything, you can find in other documents like the Catechism. But what he's doing is he's talking about our relationship to the rest of creation as though it has value in itself and value as imitation of God, and not simply value in relation to us. The other social encyclicals that talk about the environment talk about it almost exclusively in relation to human beings, and there's a lot to be said, of course. But this one treats it as being part of you know, being a reflection mm-hmm. of God's goodness in itself.
Yeah, the technical term would be anthropology.
Yeah.
Usually, these encyclicals relate creation to anthropology, to the creation of humankind, or
yes.
to the life of humankind. But here, he's staying just simply with creation, and it's creation in and of itself.
Yes. Now, not that he neglects the human person. In fact, he draws lots of connections between how we react to the non-human creation and how we treat each other. But this sense that the framework is the value of the created beings in and of themselves and as part of a universe which as a whole manifests the goodness of God, that is an emphasis that's new in the social tradition.
The press immediately, in fact, before it was out, said there will be an encyclical on climate change.
Yes,
a little bit overdrawn. There's more to it than that.
Yes, it's a general reflection on our relation to the environment. The first chapter talks about climate change among other environmental issues. It doesn't even give it the most space. Loss of biodiversity, I think, gets the most space, but it's the first time on this level that the church has taken on the climate change issue. So it's not a document on climate change. No. Climate change may have provided the occasion for it, you might say.
And it certainly is in there, but it gives him an opportunity to say in a modern way what St. Francis might have said if he had given the opportunity to expand his thought. How long is it, and how is it structured?
It is very long. Church documents are divided into numbered sections, and this is the second longest that I know of among encyclicals in terms of the number of numbered sections. There's rather more than 200 of them. Mm. It prints, if you print the PDF off the Vatican website, I think it's 82 pages. It's something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's long. Many encyclicals are much shorter than this. Take the famous birth control encyclical, 1968. That's maybe 15 pages
mm-hmm.
long.
Mm-hmm.
The structure of it follows a method that became popular in European social Catholicism in the 30s. The young Christian workers see, judge, act. Often you hear it in Spanish, ver, juzgar, actuar. I was taught it actually when I was a high school student under the name observe, judge, act.
Okay.
So chapter one, he is observing. He's describing environmental issues and their impact on people, especially the poor. Chapters 2, 3, and 4, he's judging in the sense that he's laying out a theological framework. In chapter 2, he's exploring the Bible and the tradition. Chapters 3 and 4, he's working out a theology, you might say, of the environment and our relation to it. And then chapters 5 and 6, he goes into action. Okay, well, what should we do? What should mm-hmm. we do as a world, as a world community, as nations, as individuals, every level mm-hmm. he talks about.
So three sections, see, judge, act, and six chapters. It's a well-organized document. Let's start at the top with the question about climate change in its context.
Okay.
Where would you put that? In all three?
Well, yeah, it's mentioned mostly in the chapter describing the problems mm-hmm. and then in the chapters that talk about action. It's clear that the Pope thinks that the climate change is real, that it is caused by human beings, and that we need to take action. That is, it threatens to do great damage to other species and to ourselves as well. He, although he has a degree in science, he's not talking as a scientist here. And you know, a pope doesn't have specific authority in terms of matters of science anyway. But he's talking to us in terms of, well, all right, what should we non-scientists be thinking and doing? And he holds that we need to take seriously the consensus that exists among scientists of the existence of climate change and that it is a serious threat. People will say sometimes, well, you know, there are people who dissent from the consensus, and that's certainly true. But the Pope talks about how we need to follow a precautionary principle. That is, we need to make a reasoned judgment and then act in terms of that, even though this is an area where we don't have absolute certainty. And in most science, we don't have absolute certainty. In my lecture, I gave the parallel of AIDS, where the president of South Africa followed a deviant, but a genuine scientist who had a deviant view on the cause of AIDS, and it set treatment of AIDS back in South Africa by a number of years, serious consequences.
Had he done this here, the Pope done this here, it would have done the same thing to a vast number of Christians in the world who'd have to start grappling with the fact that, well, maybe this the scientific consensus is an error. They'd have to rethink that through on theological grounds or just on the grounds of wanting to respect a tradition and a leader.
Yeah, it's not, strictly speaking, a theological question, but it's a question about how we should act, morality, prudence would be the technical term it goes under.
We'll come back to this. I love the title of the first chapter, which is What is Happening to Our Common Home? Now, I mean, this is off on a good, really, really good start. We're talking to Dr. William Collins, who is an emeritus professor of theology and philosophy at Mount St. Mary's University of Emmitsburg, and he has already read, digested, and lectured on Laudato Si, the encyclical of Pope Francis I, which is an encyclical meditation on the theology of creation, including climate change. What is happening to our common home? A survey of environmental and related problems. We've only touched on one, but I want us to go now to Judge, which is chapters 2-4, but above all to the gospel of creation. Here is the Christian tradition and the Bible, which he says, in which we see value in every created being, and not just in relationship to us. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about ghoulies and ghosties and things that would go bump in the night. No, every little insect, everything, all creatures, great and small. I got to get my phraseology correct.
Yeah, he doesn't actually talk about things we consider as pests, and maybe he should have had a
paragraph. Maybe he should have had a paragraph.
Okay, cockroaches.
No. But creation as creation, rather than creation, what it can do for you and me.
Right, yes. So he has a section on the biblical accounts of creation, and his emphasis, there's two things there. One is the goodness of creation. God saw that it was good, it says repeatedly in the first chapter of Genesis, and the role given to human beings. Genesis says that God gives us this special dominion, and that's often misunderstood to mean we can do whatever we want. And the Pope says very strongly, no, we are not God. God has given us a responsibility. Mm-hmm. We are to imitate God. Well, okay, what sort of God are we to imitate? The God that brought these beings, these creatures into being out of his goodness. So we're not to imitate a God like the warring gods of the ancient Near East to destroy whatever happens to stand in the way of our projects. Instead, our job is to be sort of like a gardener working, caring for the land.
And with that thought about the gospel of creation, it seems to me that there is a phrase here that was unusual, new to me, in fact, which maybe applies also to the last two chapters in Act, and that's called integral ecology.
Okay, yeah, I should talk about that. First of all, when I talk about integral, you have to not think of calculus. Integral relates to words like integrity and integrated. It means wholeness, usually a wholeness made up of diverse parts, but mm-hmm. they're all together working as one. Mm-hmm. In the social encyclical tradition, starting with Pope Paul VI in 1967, you have the idea of integral human development. And that means that it's not just economic, the way the standard theories were at the time. It's you develop all the dimensions of the human being, the social, the spiritual, the cultural, and so on, in addition to the economic. This is the model of development, by the way, that still guides an organization like Catholic Relief Services in its international development programs. Now, in recent years, the environment has become much more of an issue in development theory, and you often hear the term sustainable development. The Pope uses it maybe once, but he doesn't make much out of it. Integral ecology mm-hmm. would be along the lines of integral development, except it relates to all of the creatures of the world. It's a term that is used actually by some scientists. The Pope gets it from two different places in a way. He gets integral development out of the social teaching tradition, but integral ecology from certain scientists. And the idea is that you are bringing human subjectivity, emotion, experience, aesthetics, all of that into your thought. And in other words, not just confining yourself to the measurable data that scientists normally deal with. You take as large and as broad a picture as you can in dealing with the environment.
Hmm. It's a remarkable tool for evaluating science and theology nowadays, mm-hmm. Rather than seeing it in just its individual parts. And the problem nowadays is everything is so specialized anyway, it's a good thing to have.
One thing I need to say a little bit about is the idea of environmental justice. He doesn't use that term.
Right.
It's a term that's popular in the United States. But the claim is made not just by this pope, but by other popes in the tradition, that environmental damage harms the poor the most. They have the fewest resources to deal with. They tend to be located in the areas that are most vulnerable to destruction, either by forces of nature or by other human beings. I cited a study. This is not in the encyclical, but I cited a study where in the 1980s it was found that the location of toxic waste dumps in the United States correlated best with race.
Mm.
And my colleague, Dr. Bolin, told me later on that that study, though it was done in the 80s, was replicated in the 2000s with the same result.
Same result.
Yeah.
Well, you do say along the line that, and this makes sense both with St. Francis and with Pope Francis the First, that the encyclical is always linked to justice and to human well-being.
Yes.
Those are the two things. Let me ask finally about Part 3, ACT, mm-hmm. and its chapters 5 and 6.
Yes.
Here he begins with a call for international cooperation on
a
laundry list of important things, most of which we've heard about before, and they are linked with psychological, social, and political factors that one would not expect to have found in someone else, except this pope is widely read.
Yes. Okay. Many of the social encyclicals address the international community. That goes back as far as Pope John the 23rd with his Peace on Earth. So there's a lot of things about what governments need to do, what governments need to do in cooperation. Like his predecessors, he believes the United Nations needs a stronger role in dealing with environmental issues. He probably doesn't break any real new ground here. He also calls on us as individuals and communities to undergo what he calls an ecological conversion.
Yeah.
That's probably the term is new,
at least it's new to me.
Yes. I had not seen it before in any church document or, frankly, in anything else. But the idea would be that it's conversion in that religious sense of changing your way of thinking and living.
A turning around, letting the scales drop from our eyes, seeing things in a new way.
Think about how we are living, how we are relating to the other creatures in the world by the way that we are living. An example I was thinking about yesterday, it takes me about 3 hours to mow my lawn, and that mower is pumping out gas. I mean, it's absorbing gasoline and pumping out exhaust the whole time.
Right.
I don't know quite. I don't think I should just leave the lawn unmowed. That would probably be a hazard in its own right. But it did make me think, why am I doing this? What is the point of all this?
Yeah.
He also talks about our education, and he he suggests that we need to try to instill in our students a sense of simplicity. He talks about a responsible simplicity of life, a grateful contemplation of God's world. Notice that's God's world mm-hmm. as well as God's word. Mm-hmm. A concern for the needs of the poor and the protection of the environment. Those should be part of what we teach. Hopefully they will be part of what I teach.
Where will we find this on the web?
You can go to the Vatican website. It's www.vatican.va. Now, that puts you on an Italian page. But if you go up to the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little thing that says EN, which stands for English, and you can click that, and there you are. Okay. Then I think for a while it was right there on the front page, but now I think you have to click Pope Francis Encyclicals. But you can do that from the very first page you come to.
Bill Collinge is Professor Emeritus of Theology and Philosophy at Mount St. Mary's University in Emmitsburg. We've talked today about Laudato Si, the encyclical of Pope Francis I. For the Seminary Explorers, I'm Jerry Christensen.
Thank you.
Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.